ladies, welcome to the Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls podcast. I am your host, Luz Selenia, founder and owner of The Radiant Sessions, certified spiritual life coach and professional life coach, energy healer, meditation guide, and your priestess of sensuality.
Hey, church girls and those who love church girls. So we're going to start a new series this month and talk about relationships, considering with the holidays coming and all that the holidays can bring up for us. I know for myself, you know, it sometimes brings up, you know, things about my family and not having, you know, a nuclear family of my own, not being married and not having kids and all the things. And so I thought it'd be a great time to just talk about that stuff. If you're new here, but also if you've been listening for a while, you know that sensuality is as much about sex for me as it is an approach to life and taking the time to really be mindfully present in all of our experiences. And quite frankly, relationships and what was going on in my relationship to self, my relationship to God, my relationship to the man that I was with at the time was exactly how I got to sensuality, why this is so important to me, why I do what I do and share the things that I share across social media when I'm talking to friends and family. It's because of relationships. We were created for relationships. Not saying everyone's going to get married, but just relationships in general. I know with Dee, we kind of touched on relationship anarchy and how in this society we tend to elevate romantic relationships as more important than any other relationship. And more, I'm realizing that one, I don't believe in that. And two, I don't think it's necessary. I think romantic relationships, depending on how you create yours and decide to have yours, is important and can hold a very specific space in your life, but it does not have to be more important. It can just be different. And I get such amazing things from my girlfriends, and I get such amazing things from my male friends, and I get such amazing things from my romantic partners and from my family members. And those are all important. And I'm able to give to myself some amazing things as well, because the relationship that I have with myself is top tier at this point in my life. So I say all that to say that you're going to get sex. You're going to get sex. I promise you, you're going to get sex. I love talking about sex. I love sex. I think there's so much more to learn and decolonize and deconstruct when it comes to sex. But we're not always going to talk about that. Or at least that's not always going to be the primary focus. Obviously, when you're talking about relationships, sex is a thing. It is very important. And how important it is to you is depending on you and your relationships and the people you are having sex with. But I just want to share. Today we're going to share. I'm just going to be vulnerable and transparent with you all. We'll go into some more teaching and educational content around relationships and working on having a therapist who actually specializes in this stuff on later on this month. To get a clinical perspective as well, and how we can hold on to and maintain our healing, our sensuality as we're engaging our family, our friends, and how to set boundaries and what are attachments, how we can learn from them and all those things. But today, we're just going to talk. So sit with me. You know, you're driving, just be careful, but, you know, sit with me. And yeah. So it'll be 5 years in January since I left my abusive relationship. It'll be about 7 years since I started therapy while I was in that relationship. And to be very, very honest, I did not go to therapy with the intention of talking about my relationship. It wasn't about, I had plenty to be upset about or not satisfied about. I went to therapy because I was stuck. I felt stuck. I had been laid off from my job at BET that I was working for 11 years. And I did not know what I wanted for my life. Everybody's like, what are you going to do? What do you want to do? What do you want to do? And I was just moving forward or trying to move forward very mindlessly. Just trying to see whatever would stick. Like, whatever is going to work out, you know, that's what I want. And I was so unhappy. I was overweight. And my relationships with my friends, you know, were pretty much non-existent. I stopped looking at myself in the mirror. And I didn't realize it at the time that I wasn't doing it because like you put on clothes, you look, but I really wasn't, I wasn't seeing myself. I remember the day, I can't remember exactly what day it was or the date, but I remember the day that I stood in the mirror and looked at myself and realized just how long it had been since I really saw myself. And I was like, oh my God, like I got hair going on my chin. Like who, no one told me. And, you know, I'm like, I saw how much weight I had gained. And mind you, I'm living with my boyfriend at the time. And it was also sad because I'm living with him and I'm like, he doesn't see me either. And so I'm in therapy and she started me with doing a genogram. If you've never done a genogram, it's a great exercise. And I will, if you subscribe to the newsletter, I'll send that out tomorrow with some more information on a genogram. But basically a genogram is similar to what you would think of as a family tree. But in the genogram that she had me do, I did the family tree as far as I could. And I started plotting like major themes from each and every individual in my family, whether it was illnesses, things about relationships that I knew, the experience, you know, experiences that I knew they had gone through. And very quickly, I realized one major thread was that every woman that I knew that I was connected to in my biological family, and this was my mother's side, because at that point, I don't know much about my father's side and the women in my father's side. And I wasn't raised with them. Every one of them had been in an abusive relationship. My grandmother, my mom, my aunt, my sisters. And I knew that my mom had been in an abusive relationship with one of my sister's fathers, actually both of my sister's fathers. And I knew that my grandmother had been in a previous marriage before my grandfather, and he was abusive. I knew that my aunt was in abusive relationships, ended up in prison and all of those things. But I never really made the connection. Like in church, we talk about generational curses a lot. And we, you know, oh, we're going to break the generational curse and we're pleading the blood and this and the other. But I had never been in a situation where we actually made that really plain and really talked about like, what does that look like? And how does that manifest? And yes, pray and believe God. But, you know, what is the practical application? How do we take those prayers and, you know, faith without works is dead? What are we doing to end the cycle? You know, in science, they call it epigenetics. And how, you know, when a woman has eggs in her body and, you know, and the egg that creates your mother, because we are in our grandmother's womb, essentially. Of course, I'm not a doctor, so, you know, my explanation is probably terrible, but I hope you can get what I'm saying. And that, you know, and that is that those generations are literally, so when we are in our mother's stomach, we were also in our grandmother's stomach, and everything that they experience and they go through, we are born with that already coded inside of us. And of course, because I knew those things about my mom and my grandmother, I would always tell, I'm never, ever, ever going to be in an abusive relationship. I would never let a man do that. And oftentimes, I know for me, I focused on like the physicality associated with the abuse. I would never let a man hit me. Well, my ex never hit me. He was physically aggressive with me, physically intimidating. He would restrain me and tell me how he could kill me and how fast he could. He never hit me. And not to like compare on what is worse or what is, you know, not as bad, but it was definitely for me very, very tricky because most of the abuse that I endured with him was verbal and emotional. It wasn't physical, unless it was about sex, because it was also very sexually abusive. But it wasn't physical in the sense that he was punching me. I wasn't walking around with black eyes or bruises on my body. He was too smart for that. I'm light-skinned. If you've never seen me, I'm very light-skinned. I bruise very easily. And he knew well enough to not leave a mark that anyone could see. And so it didn't, you know, seeing that with my family didn't automatically hit, you know, that I was in one. It wasn't until months later. And it was something, you know, again, shout out to all the good therapists. She wasn't telling me, you're in an abusive relationship, you got to get out. Probably would have been, it would have shut me down. I'm like, no, I'm not. Who wants to believe that? But as I progressed in my therapy and started learning more and opening my mind to certain things and seeing, and, you know, and I'm talking to her about how I was being treated, and she's helping me to, you know, find ways to cope with it and deal with it in safe ways. I remember it was like the summertime and I'm sitting in the session with her, and I'm like, and I had that moment of awareness that I'm in an abusive relationship. And again, although he hadn't hit me, he made it very clear how capable he was of killing me. But in that moment, my fear wasn't that he would kill me. My fear was that I at that point started to see the way in which I had become a shell of myself. That even if he never physically did anything to me, and that my physical safety wasn't in jeopardy, the safety of my soul and my spirit was. And that I did not want to die to myself. I felt like I was at a place that if I keep going and I stay here, I don't think I could recover. The longer I stay, the harder it's going to be to recover. And the harder it's going to be to get myself back. But what was really integral to that moment in that process was learning how the abusive tactics that he employed in our relationship, that one of the major reasons why I did not see it and it did not register as abuse, is because those same things were very prevalent in church and in my family. And so being raised under those things as a child, that is what becomes your norm. And then you know, with attachment theory and all those things, like you, the relationships that you get in after that, until you learn differently and are able to deconstruct those things to be able to reconstruct healthy relationships, the relationships that you're in are going to pattern after the foundation that you received in how you were raised. That's why you'll see where people, like, you realize somebody marries, you know, you marry a woman, you're a man and you marry a woman, and you start to see the ways in which your wife might be very similar to your mother, or for, you know, and vice versa. You might start to see how there are similarities to the way, you know, the upbringing and the things that they carry. You know, there's always differences, but you tend to be attracted to what is familiar. And so, you know, I didn't have my father in my life. It wasn't even his fault. He didn't know that he had a child. And so although he wasn't an absent father by choice, I realized that I tended to be in a relationship with men who were emotionally unavailable. And because of things that I learned in church and the way that I was, you know, raised with my mom and but also raised with my grandparents, that anytime things got too hard, we would get shipped to my grandparents and they would care for us for years at a time, that I learned as a means of survival, because that's the thing, like we're trying, you know, as kids, we're just trying to get our needs met. And so the things that we go through is like, you just learn how to try to get your needs met, even if it is toxic, unhealthy, whatever. And so, you know, my toxic trait was I was a people pleaser and I was trying to prove my worth to someone and because I wanted them to stay. And I thought, you know, well, my mom didn't stay. My dad wasn't here. I've always known my dad, you know, didn't know, but he's not here. And, you know, so people who love you, like, you know, they're always leaving me. And I just wanted someone to stay. And so, and when you leave, it's my fault because, you know, with my mom specifically, she, when I was with her, even when I wasn't, she always talked about how good of a child I was. Oh, she's a straight A student. She's so easy. She doesn't give me trouble. Everyone's always, you know, was always praising me for being this ideal model child, except she kept leaving. And the child mind of mine was like, well, it must be something else. If I'm doing all these things and she keeps leaving, now I can see like, oh, it's you know, living proof. It wasn't about me. It was about her. But as a child, I took on so much of the responsibility to try to keep my mom around. Because I didn't have a choice about my dad. And I carried that same thought process into relationships, that it was my job and my responsibility to keep a man. And that is echoed through society. When a man cheats, how often do we hear, oh, well, it's her fault. She probably wasn't sleeping with him. She probably wasn't doing this. Oh, look at her, look at her. And so when that foundation is laid and then the house gets built on that and it's just telling you the same things and you internalize that. And I don't, you know, my mom was gorgeous and I didn't look like her and I couldn't see my own beauty because I didn't have anyone around that I felt like I looked like. I didn't have any frame of reference. Like all of these things played a role. And I know people look at me. I know I'm gorgeous. I know I'm beautiful now. And I say that to people and they look at me like I got 10 heads. Like, how could you possibly not have thought that you were pretty? But I didn't. And I was constantly getting accused of feeling of thinking I was better than people, or you think you're this, you think you're that. And I would sit there and I'd be like, y'all have no idea. And you don't believe me when I would tell people, don't believe me, that it really hasn't been, you know, until a few years ago that I really truly started to believe that I was beautiful inside and out. Because when a man or a boy at the time would come and try to talk to me, it wasn't, in my mind, it wasn't about me. It was about what you could get from me. My grandfather had this speech that, you know, I used to be able to say word for word. I think I've kind of intentionally, you know, forgotten it because it's really bad. But it, you know, mostly went with, you know, old men only want one thing from you. Keep your legs closed. husbands, you know, want clean houses, so make sure you keep your house clean. And it was, you know, all about, I'm sure, well-meaning, but all about, you know, how a woman shows up and making sure that, you know, because if you don't do these things, then you won't be respected. And, you know, and it's your fault. If you're not respected by a man, it's your fault. And so, I even with guys, like when they, you know, I'm 16, 17, the first guy that I was in a relationship with at 16, when I moved back from Florida here to Maryland, was someone I wasn't really attracted to physically, but he engaged me in a way that most guys did not, in that he wasn't super pressed about me being Puerto Rican. He didn't, you know, he wasn't super pressed, at least outwardly so, about me having long hair or being light skinned or being pretty or trying to have sex with me or nothing like that. Like, we genuinely just hung out, talked on the phone, got to know each other. And so I felt like, oh, he really likes me for me. And so I went with it. Now, he ended up cheating on me over and over and over again. But, you know, which also adds on to everything, you know, that I went through as a child and how I'm learning, you know, the experiences that teach you things, whether you realize that you're being taught in the moment that, oh, men cheat. And I'm not having sex with him, and him cheating never really didn't pressure me into having sex, because I was very clear that I was not going to be a single mother. And the only way that I knew I could prevent that 100% was not having sex. I was convinced, and I, you know, or convinced myself, that no amount of contraceptive or condom or combination of anything, and I was on birth control really early because my cycle was very irregular as a teen. But being on birth control and wearing a condom and doing all the things would not be enough to prevent pregnancy for me. I was very convinced. So, you know, I kept taking him back, like, oh, well, I'm not having sex with him. This man needs sex. He's going to just keep cheating on me. It's my fault because I won't have sex with him. Oh, well. And so, yeah, it, you know, it culminated into being 30 years old and, you know, being with this man who was abusive to me and getting in therapy and realizing just how much, like, it wasn't just about him. Like, I could have focused on that relationship and that would have probably maybe got beat out or whatever. But one of the reasons why I feel like I was successful, because most women are not successful in leaving the first time. Most women in abusive relationships go back. If they do leave, they go back several times and it gets worse. And I'm grateful that wasn't my story. But I think it's because I just kind of had the knowing that this was a crucial moment for me as an individual, as a being. But also because in therapy and the therapist that I had, I was approaching it from a different perspective, that I wasn't going to try to fix the relationship. I was going because I knew that there was something in me going on in me, and I did not have the tools on my own to address it. So by the time I went to therapy, like, I did all the things that I normally would do. I'd go to the library. I love to read. I'd get all the self-help books and do all the things. And I would pray and I would go to church and, you know, and drill down and be disciplined and do this and blah, blah, blah. And none of the things that I would try before that seemed to work in the past wasn't working. And therapy at that moment was the only thing that I had not tried. And I was desperate. And thank God for Open Path Collective, because I was also very underinsured, and finding Open Path Collective to, you know, have that membership and to be able to, you know, have access to therapy for a rate that was affordable to me at the time, because remember, like, I'm laid off from my job and had no employment after that and was just living off of severance. And so that's why I go so hard, because, yeah, not all of you have not, you know, I pray, I'm sure all of you have not been in an abusive relationship in the way that I've been, or in the way that other people have been, where, you know, they're being beat on and all the other things that go along with it. But I just want us to have healthier more fulfilling relationships with ourselves, with whoever we believe in, whoever we serve, creator, God, source, you know, whoever that is, have better relationships with our families, our friends, our partners. Because like if you're on social media, I know that red pill shit and the male podcast, but even, you know, a lot of the women, like, we have not been taught very well how to have healthy relationships. We have relationships out of survival. And I get it. I get why that's the case historically. I get why, you know, like marriages, you know, historically have been about business and contracts and agreements. And if the love is there, it's cool. But we aren't, you know, I wish we were progressing. I know we're progressing. I see it. But I really wish we were progressing at better rates. There's a lot of very toxic information out there about relationships, about, you know, and you see things like men admitting that they settled for their wife because she was financially stable and that if it wasn't for that, you would still be with your ex that you were in love with. And knowing that that was one man who was honest about that, and that there are many other men who are married to women who are miserable because they know they settled for whatever the reason, and she's miserable, likely trying to get a man to love her who never loved her. And it reminds me of a conversation that I had with a group of guys over the summer where they were saying, women are taught what they deserve in relationships and men are not. And in that moment, I was like, I got to disagree with you. I'm not going to disagree with you about what men are taught and what they're not taught, because I'm not a man. That's not my place. But I'm going to disagree as a woman. I'm going to disagree with you that women, you know, as a whole, of course, this is a very general statement. I'm sure that there are women who are actually taught what they deserve. And in very specifically, we're talking about Black women. I was like, but Black women as a whole, we're not taught what we deserve. We might be taught what I told them was what we're taught is how to get a certain kind of man. And even in that, we're taught, well, if he comes home and pays the bills, or if he comes home, maybe he's not even paying the bills, but if he's there, what you got to complain about? Well, there's a lot of men who don't come home. If he ain't cheating, he not working, but at least he not cheating. It's always that at least. I was like, that isn't being taught what we deserve. And I was like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. I was like, but from what I see, men aren't taught what they deserve either, because they're taught what kind of woman they should have. And that's why you end up settling. And maybe some of you cheat. Not all of you, because some of you, you know, some people cheat just because they trash. But some of you, you're cheating because you should have never been with them in the first place. But she looked the right way. She talked the right way. Maybe she came from a good family or whatever. Maybe she's beautiful and you can't imagine, like, oh my God. But a lot of us are settling and wondering, and we settle not even just in romantic relationships. A lot of us are settling in our families. Like, oh, well, we only get one mom. We only get one dad. We only get, you know, these are my sisters. These are my cousins. This is my family. This is my blood. We're settling in our friendships. Like, oh, well, I've known her since college. Or I've known her, you know, that's my homie. We grew up together. Because we fear disconnection. We fear being alone and lonely. And so we convince ourselves, and all the messaging that we're getting is telling us, well, at least they're still there. Like so many of us realizing, you know, a lot of what I've went through and experienced and allowed was from the foundation of having an abandonment wound. And when you have an abandonment wound, as long as they stay, you tend to take a lot of mistreatment. Now, if you don't have an abandonment wound and your wound is more of an attachment wound, you might not let them stay. But if they say all the right things and they do all the right things and, you know, and they're cheating on you, but they say they love me and they're showing me love in other ways. And we settle. In church, we hear, oh, love your neighbor as yourself. In the last few years, I'll always whisper, but what if we don't know what love is? People are, I think overwhelmingly, a lot of people are loving their neighbor as themselves because we don't know how to love ourselves well. So how do we know how to love someone else well? We did not get that foundation. We didn't. A lot of us were not modeled what healthy love is. Reading bell hooks was like education that we all need. Grew up in church, you can probably recite 1 Corinthians 13, love is this, love is that, da da da. And that's not bad. Those are great things to learn about love, but we don't learn love in action. So much of what we learn in church is that love hurts. The example of Jesus Christ, Yeshua, dying on the cross for our sins is like the epitome of love hurting. And we're supposed to be like him. And I've gotten to the point where it's like, yeah, no, I am, and neither are you, are called to sacrifice your life for love of someone else. He did it once. It's done. I can't save nobody. Shout out to homegirl from TikTok. I can't save nobody. Myself. That's energy is for. And quite frankly, you know, that's why boundaries are so important. One of my favorite definitions of boundaries is it's the distance from which I can love you and love myself at the same time. And leaving that relationship, I made a commitment to myself that if I ever get in a relationship, platonic, romantic, or familiar otherwise, and I feel and I'm in a place and being put in a position where loving you costs me so much that I am not loving myself, that I would choose me. Because compromise is not going to cause me to sacrifice myself. Full stop. And that's what I was doing for so long. I was putting myself on the block in hopes that they would not actually go through with it, that they would save me and love me. No. And they weren't picking me up. They couldn't. Because they ain't love themselves either. And so now, a couple months away from 40, in a really great place in my life, but single. It gets hard sometimes. 20-year-old me, 18-year-old me knew I was going to be married, have kids. This was the life. Never would have thought that I'd be this age and living the life that I'm living and that my life would look the way it looks. Now, I am so grateful with how my life has shaped to be, and so grateful for the opportunities that I have, and so grateful for all the love that I have that's coming to me, that I give to myself, that I'm able and very much so grateful for even the opportunities to show love to other people and how it just fills my life up so much. But it's also important to grieve what we thought our life would look like. And it doesn't. It's okay. We adopt these timelines and these steps and these check marks from all over the place, you know. And I think back now, I'm like, where did I get this thing that you go to college and, you know, and you hear these all this programming that we receive, and we like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be. By 25, I'll be married. I'll be before 30. I'll have a couple kids. We'll have a house. You know, I'll be in my career. I'll be you know, and it's like very, you know, maybe for some people it works out that way. Exactly the way you think it is, it does. And for a lot of us, it doesn't. And we do the work. We do the work to heal enough to be aware and to know who we are and to be confident in who we are. There's a quote that I heard, and I wish I knew exactly who it was from. So if you know who the author of this quote is, leave me a note and let me know. But it says, confidence is when being yourself becomes a habit. You are so comfortable and aware of who you are that you can be you in any moment and around anyone. And that's why we heal. That's why we heal. So we can be who we are around anyone and in any moment. It's why, like, I stopped therapy after a while. I'll go back if the need arises, but because I didn't want to become, I saw myself kind of becoming that person where I was kind of getting addicted to always trying to work on myself. And that's not the point of healing. Like, we're people always evolving. And if you're all constantly hyper-focused on working on yourself, then when are you living? And we're not broken. And I have tools. So when I need them, I can pull them out. I have resources. So if I need to go back to my therapist, I can. But I don't want you all to think that, oh my God, I'm so fucked up. I have all these fucked up relationships in my family and this and that and the other. And to think that that's the journey, it's not. It's just, we got to heal enough for where we are. Heal enough to be confident and aware and present in the current moments and where you are in your life right now. And when it's time to elevate, then you might, you know, you might have to go like, okay, I got to heal for the next level. And then you heal for that level and you live there, you thrive there, you enjoy it, you know, you shine there. And that's where it's like, it's a cyclical journey. Like, and you might feel like you might find yourself going back to things that you thought you had addressed. But again, you know, you're healing for where you are and where you're going. And then you get there and you're there. And that's the journey. It's like, it's just being able to address the things, because ultimately, you know, when you're going towards the next step and that's manifesting, you want to be aware enough that if something that you experience, some trauma, some past, some attachment issue from your parenting, whatever, that it does not prevent you from getting to that place. Whether it's a relationship, whether it's a career, whether it's a dream job, you know, whatever it is, that we do not allow those things to prevent us from actualizing what we deserve, what is manifesting in our lives. And that is why healing is important. And that is why, you know, to go back, having, you know, that glimmer of wisdom to be like, I feel stuck. Nothing else is working. Let me go to therapy. Because there is more. And I don't know how to access it. And I need help. I stopped dreaming. Like, it was crazy. Like, again, when people, not even just about, oh, what I want to do with my job. I had divorced myself from just dreaming in general. And so if any of this sounds familiar, if you don't know, because I think, you know, a lot of times, again, it requires you to be honest. we know what sounds good. And somebody's like, oh, what do you want out of your life? What is your dream? And you just spit something off because you don't want to, you don't want to be, it's hard to tell someone, actually, I don't know what my dream is. I don't know what I truly desire. I'm just doing the things that I know I'm supposed to do. Getting up, I'm going to work, I'm taking care of the kids, I'm cleaning the house, I'm going to church. I'm a robot existing in my life as a robot. And if you sit down and if any of this kind of like is tugging at you, if you really, you know, sit and take a second and just say, and whatever comes to your mind, maybe it's nothing. Maybe nothing comes to mind. And ask yourself the question and answer it out loud. What does your life look like in 5 years? What do you want? If you don't know, that's not supposed to be that way. You are meant for more. It's not supposed to be that way. You're stuck in survival. And that's important. Being able to survive is important, obviously. Knowing how to cope, knowing how to be able to, like, I just gotta get through this. But that shouldn't be our state of being. We shouldn't live there forever. There is more. And while we look around and we see other people getting more, and we're not, it weighs on you. And you're trying to figure out, it's not that they're more special. It's not that you're not special. It's not that you don't have it. Everybody has an it. Your it is going to be different from my it, but everybody got an it. You just got to know how to access it. You're going to have some hard conversations. You're going to have to face some things. Not everything. That's the thing. Like, again, you heal for where you know, enough to be aware, to know how to handle the things. It's not good so they can stop preventing you from getting what it is that you deserve, from living the life that you are worthy of living inherently because you exist. That's it. So it doesn't mean that you got to drag everything up, but if it's stopping you, if it's a roadblock on the way to manifesting who you are and who you've always been and who you're supposed to be, all those at the same time, then we got to address it in a safe place, in a safe way. You know, no need to pull the Band-Aid off and just let the bleed, you know, and bleed out. If that's you, I'm here for you. I am not a therapist. So, and some people absolutely need therapy. Therapy is not the only way to heal. It is very, very important. It was a very important part of my life. And still is and will always be to some extent or another. But what's more important is just finding your way, finding out what it is you need. And so I'm here for you to be a resource. If it is you want therapy, you need help with that and how to find a good therapist. I'm here for you as a coach, as a community leader. You're not alone. And you're not the only one who's in that place. That's the other thing that shame does. It makes us feel like no one will understand. You can't say nothing because, oh, everybody else is doing good and you don't want to be that person. Yeah, no. So before we close, I want to share a prayer. Now, this prayer is something that you likely have heard before, except you might not have heard it in this way. We are very familiar. If you grew up in church with the Lord's Prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, so on and so forth. But thanks to good old TikTok, I heard a translation that was absolutely beautiful. And it's the Lord's Prayer from Aramaic to English, taken from the book Prayers of the Cosmos by Neil Douglas Klotz. And it goes like this. O birther, father, mother of the cosmos, You create all that moves in light. Focus your light within us. Make it useful as the rays of a beacon show the way. Let your counsel rule our lives, clearing our intention for co-creation. Help us love beyond our ideals and sprout actions of compassion for all creatures. Give us the food we need to grow through each new day, through each illumination of life's needs. Forgive our hidden past, the secret shames, as we consistently forgive what others hide. Don't let us enter forgetfulness, the temptation of false appearances. From you is born all ruling will, the power and life to do, the song that beautifies all from age to age, it renews. Amen. So I hope you have an amazing week. As always, be as radiant as the sun. And if you do want to join the Radiant Sessions community as an extension of Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls, the link is in the show description. It's on Facebook. If you search the Radiant Sessions Society, you can answer the questions and I will accept you. And just as a point, this is a group that is centered on the experience of the Black woman, but that does not mean that only Black women will be accepted into the group. There will probably be some things that will only be open to Black women when I start hosting events. But if you love Black women and champion the healing and the freedom of Black women, and you want to join the community, you are also open. But the moment that anyone, Black woman or not, you violate any of the rules, I will not have any tolerance for that. It's your first offense and you're gone. This is a safe space, a safe community for us to be sensual, to be sexy, to decolonize, to deconstruct, and ultimately to be as radiant as the sun. Until next time, I love you. Adios. Mwah.